as I'm talking to Ryan Olson, as promised, he is the education the director of education policy, rather, for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Ryan, appreciate you hanging out. How's Midland this morning holding up?
It's cold this morning.
I can imagine. Yeah, it's cold.
Sounds like it's cold up there, too.
Yeah, it's cold everywhere today. You getting snow down there? Is it pretty clear on that?
It's pretty clear right now. I think we're supposed to get some, though.
Yep. Yeah, I think a more widespread one's coming for all of us on this particular one. You've been doing a little snooping with some stuff going on. I hate to say that. I shouldn't say it like that. It makes it sound like you're being a spy or something. This is all public records.
Public
stuff.
Information, yep.
Yep, exactly. But you've been looking at the some of the stuff with the Michigan Education Association and that new filing they did with the Department of Labor that they do every year now. What was the reason you looked that over?
I looked at it because, really, in the education process, teachers are most important. I mean, education is about interaction between a teacher and a student. And most teachers in the state of Michigan have to be members of the Michigan Education Association Union in order to be employed in a school district. They have to pay dues to the MEA. And so I thought it would be a good idea to analyze this public record of what the MEA, what the union is doing with the dues money that they are essentially forcing union members to pay. And what I found is that MEA members are bearing more of the cost of operating the MEA, while the amount of time that the union is spending representing MEA members is actually decreasing. So they're paying more and they're getting less, essentially.
That's interesting. I mean, how often do you see that happen? It almost sounds like when they take the box and make it a smaller box and put more air in it or something when I buy my chips.
Yeah, well, what's happening is that membership went from about 164,000 employees, students, retirees in 2005 to about 157,000 members in 2007, while at the same time, revenue from dues is increased from about $63 million in 2006 to $67 million in 2007. So there's a greater cost there per member. And the union is only spending, according to their own report with the U.S. Department of Labor, 41% of their time representing members. And that's really that's the point of a union. That's the legal purpose of a union, is to represent its members. And I think that's really what union members are looking for from their union. And the MEA is spending less than half of its time actually doing that.
This is going to get real curious as it goes. Hold that thought just a minute because I got to check. I've already checked the forecast. Big dummy me. Now, what happens when these kind of activities are going around, when they're only doing a smaller percentage of this sort of thing? I mean, where do you spend your time at?
Well, they report in some other categories. For example, overhead. I'm not exactly sure what that means, is a large percentage of the time.
Well, it sounds like it means electric bills and water bills. But
well, there's that. Then there's also administrative costs, which they bill a lot of their time to administrative costs. Their political and lobbying activities as well. So, but the key category to look at is the representational category, because, again, that's really the legal purpose of a union, and that's essentially what union members are looking for when they bargain collectively. They're looking for effective representation.
That's it. You know, I certainly think they would be, and this, to see that kind of drop off like that, that's got to have an impact on it.
Yeah, and I think that's a question that MEA members have the right to ask. Are we getting what we pay for? The real problem is that the MEA... except they receive dues and agency fees regardless of whether members are happy with the services they're receiving from the union or not. In Michigan, money for unions comes in under compulsion, essentially. If you want to work in a school district in Michigan that's represented by the MEA, which is most school districts in the state of Michigan, you cannot work in the district unless you pay dues. And so a key question is, wouldn't it be better to have a policy where union members can have a choice about what actually happens with their money? It's really, really seems only fair that they would have a choice about whether the services they're receiving are effective.
Let's talk about some of the number crunch right now. How many members are in the NEA MEA right now?
157,000, according to their report for 2007.
That's got to be down some, isn't it, because of the teacher layoffs and changes in education?
Yeah, that's down from about 164,000 in 2005.
Wow, that is a lot of decline.
Yeah.
What is that, about 4 or 5%, I think?
5%. But the problem is that again, union revenues from dues are increasing. So even though they have membership declining, members are bearing a greater cost for operating the union itself. And what's really interesting is to look at union official salaries and to see how those are climbing as well. Ira Salters, the president of the MEA, received a gross salary of $198,000 last year. Luigi Battaglieri, the executive director of the MEA, had a gross salary of $195,000. I think these are salaries that union members would be interested in. And in fact, when we ran a story a couple of years ago looking at these numbers, which were, of course, lower a couple of years ago, we received a lot of mail from teachers. For example, one teacher, an elementary school teacher in West Michigan, said, quote, "Based on the wage that is felt to be reasonable for me and my colleagues, I feel they, the union officials, are paid too much for the service they provide." So there seems to be some alarm at these numbers when they actually get out there. And so I think it's important that unions have accountability from their members.
Well, at that kind of price, I mean, you're talking most likely that is got to be one of the highest paid educators in the state, if not the highest. I mean, that's right up there with some of the highest superintendents in the state.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there may be a superintendent that does more, but if there is, it's got to be just a handful.
And what happens in a lot of districts is that the average teacher salary is sometimes half of the salary of the person who is representing teachers in that region at the bargaining table. And a lot of teachers don't realize that either. And so, you know, the UNISERV directors that are actually negotiating for teachers at the table and other school employees are often receiving, you know, annual increases, while teachers sometimes don't receive an increase. And that's cause for some alarm, I think, with some MEA members.
How do they do that without getting caught? I mean, is nobody reading this stuff but you?
Well, I think that's part of it. It's public, but it's buried on a U.S. Department of Labor website, so it's kind of hard to find. But it's just really important, because teachers are so important in the educational process, that, you know, their professional interests are looked out for, and that's why I wanted to look at it.
So how mad is the local shop steward hearing me do this interview? Am I going to get a phone call and get yelled at over this?
I have no idea. I think it would be great if they provided some answers as to, you know, why on average their employees are spending about 41% of their time on representational activities.
Well,
I think that's something that union members would be interested in hearing about as well.
Wanted to talk with you first off about, you mentioned the Worker Freedoms Bill. What exactly, give us a little more detail of what that entails.
Well, it's a policy that the Mackinac Center has been talking about for 20 years now. This is our 20th anniversary, 2008. And we've been talking about this because what it would do is it would give workers in Michigan the freedom to choose whether to pay dues to the union or not, whether the services they receive from the union are worth the dues that they're being asked to pay. And this essentially would help to hold unions accountable to its members, because union members would have a say. It would operate a little more like a market, like we were talking about before. So this would be very important for worker fairness, because people who earn money ought to be able to say what they do with it. They shouldn't be forced to pay money to a union as a condition of employment in Michigan school districts or in other places in the state of Michigan. This would not affect the ability of people to organize and become members of unions. People would still be able to freely associate and collectively bargain, but it would give people a choice about whether to pay dues or not.
And you know, the other side's going to come back and say, well, our negotiations that we do affects everybody, regardless whether they would be a union member or not under the circumstances. And so where's the benefit for us to be able to pay for those union negotiations for people who aren't going to pay us to do it?
Well, I believe that school employees are honest, you know, hardworking people, and that if they're getting a benefit from union representation, that they'll pay for that service they're receiving. This is what we see in states that have adopted an amendment like this. More than 3 out of 4 union members continue to pay dues to the union. So they're recognizing the services that the union provides. So, you know, there still would definitely be a mechanism for unions to get the money they may need to represent members who choose that representation.
You know, you mentioned some states that you've studied. What do you see? I mean, because one of the big things I see with unions when they come up, when this kind of scenarios come up with, oh, the union's going to collapse, you're trying to bust the union and so forth. I take it the union still exists in states that have this kind of rulings and these kind of issues up?
Yeah, absolutely. They still exist. And, you know, in those states, on average, that have some kind of worker freedom amendment, more than 3 out of 4 union members continue to pay dues. But what we see is a tremendous economic benefit with such a policy. And so in states that have this kind of policy, jobs are added at more than twice the rate as compared to states that don't have this kind of policy. Per capita income tends to be higher than in states that don't have this kind of policy. And in those states where per capita income isn't currently higher, we've projected that it will be higher in just 2 years, by 2010. And if people are interested in reading more about the economic benefit of this kind of policy, they could go to our website again at mackinaw.org.
Is that in the same article that you have, or is it a separate one?
It's a different one. It's called, it's by Paul Kersey, my colleague in labor policy, and it's linked right on our website.
Okay, we'll check that out too, because that's really interesting how the changes and that could really make an impact.
But see, it really does affect union members on the ground, which is the point of looking at how unions are spending their money, what membership is doing, and you know where the costs are, and how big a burden those costs are on union members, and how much better it would be if union members were able to choose whether those costs, whether the cost to them is worth it for the services they receive.
Ryan, this is probably not as easy to track, but has anybody taken a look at a lot of political issues and so forth? As you know, unions get involved heavily, a lot of them do, heavily in politics. And a lot of the complaints about being union members has been from people who have a conservative bent who have to pay for an organization to put liberal policy agendas out and so forth. Does that change with this kind of ruling?
No, but it would. There is a concern, I think, among some union members that the union dues they're paying are not going for representational activities. They're going for other activities, and those could include political or lobbying activities. And so, yes, it would give union members more discretion. And I think this is telling in the MEA's case because, according to their own report, they're spending 41% of their time on representational activities. So, you know, union members may be interested in telling the union whether they think that is good enough for them or not.
Yeah, because you know a lot of, MEA is one of the most powerful lobbies in the state. So a lot of that activity, I don't know how they hide it or if they do in this report that you read about that they turned in to the Department of Labor every year. But certainly nonetheless, it's certainly that's coming from somewhere.
Right. That's right. And a lot of the political activity comes from the MEA's Political Action Committee, which is, union members can donate to that separately. But, you know, that is a concern, I think, among some union members, that they're not always receiving the representational activities that they think they should be getting for the dollars they're spending.
Certainly so.